Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm James Taylor, and this week I'm joined by a JTET debutant, all the way from Okinawa. It's James Gallagher. Hi James, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you, James?
Yeah, I'm all right, thanks. Thanks very much for coming onto the pod and give us your FC Ryukyu perspective on things. Yeah, it's really exciting to have a new voice.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I'm really excited.
Good. Well, then let's get stuck in, shall we? You're here for one main reason, and that's to talk about FC Ryukyu's 1-0 win over Tochigi last Saturday, and it was a 12th-minute goal from Yuki Kusano that was the difference after some quite clever play by, was it Ren Ikeda, who outstretched his boot and managed to flick the ball back across to Kusano, who was standing all alone right in front of the goal. And that win moved Ryukyu off the bottom of the table up to the dizzy heights of 21st, while Tochigi stayed in 19th. First of all, James, what did you think about this game from a Ryukyu perspective?
Yeah, I thought it was a well-won match, and it was much needed for Ryukyu supporters. It was the first win at home all season, and we've seen glimpses of a team that can get the job done at home, but we haven't seen the job completed. And even going back towards the tail end of last season, that was the first home win in 11 matches, and it was past due for Ryukyu supporters, but it was a product of something that home fans especially had seen out of this team. When Ren Ikeda is on, he keeps plays alive, much like he did on that goal. He is able to move the ball where it needs to move. He's able to carry it with speed, and especially the likes of the other midfielders can find, can make sure the ball is played to space. But as you mentioned, Yuki Kusano, when he gets quality service, he knows what to do with it. And especially in that goal against Tochigi, that was one of maybe the more simpler goals he scored this season, with a tap in from the 6-yard box. But when Kusano is provided quality service, he knows what to do with it.
Yeah, I think he's proved to be a really, really good signing, and it seems like he's got seven goals now, and he's scored in 5 consecutive games, but there aren't really any. It doesn't seem to be getting much goal scoring support. So it seems like he's kind of doing a lot of it on his own, keeping Ryukyu sort of in touch with the teams above. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
I do, James. I think Kusano, so much, especially scoring in each of his last 5. I think it highlights that a lot of things are going through Yuki Kusano on Ryuki's offense right now. I think it is a product of the service that Katsuya Nakano and Koki Kiyotake are providing him right now. Kiyotake especially is in more of a support providing role, as opposed to last season. He ended last season with 9 goals, and he's definitely been providing a lot of quality up front, but it hasn't been in necessarily the number of opportunities to finish that he had last season, but he's already got 5 assists on the season, and his role has maybe shifted a little bit, but Kiyotake and Kusano, along with Ren Ikeda at certain times, are providing some quality service that when they're at their best, there are balls to turn in to the net. And I think that is very much in line with some of the glimpses of quality that Ryukyu supporters have seen, and especially where we currently find ourselves in the table, what they want to see more for the rest of the season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Kusano's job is to score goals, isn't it? So it's right that he should be the top scorer. He should be banging them in. And he's getting the service now, which is a good sign for the rest of the season. And looking at the table, Ryukyu have scored 19 goals, so that's not bad. That compares fairly well with other teams in the division. But at the other end of the pitch, this was the second clean sheet in a row, which is good. But defensively, how are you feeling about Ryukyu overall, and what did you think of the defensive performance in this match?
Defensively, this season it has been calamitous at times. There have been far too many early goals, even from Kusano, goals scored in the first 30 minutes, where Ryukyu gets out to a 1-0 lead and are unable to walk away with any points at all. Far too many 2-1 losses. I look at my notes here so far in the season and can, at first glance, count 4 2-1 losses. But whether it's unable to hold leads or just unable to keep the ball out of the net, whether Ryukyu's established a lead or not, matches like 4-1 against Oita, 5-2 against Tokyo Verde, obviously those increase the goals against column, but times where the defense just hasn't looked confident. This weekend against Tochigi was one of Lee Yong-jik's best performances this season. That his positioning was solid. He was making some nice challenges, and minus a couple real threats from Tochigi, Ryukyu held the majority of the possession. They didn't give up those gimme opportunities, those lollipop chances for the other team that if you were a striker or midfielder with that look on goal, your eyes would get big and just savor the moment that defense gave you. And against Tochigi, Ryukyu definitely looked more confident. They kept a lot of the play to the outside, and again, with the exception of a few crosses, looked confident in defending and looked to not only move the ball out well, but have a little bit of passion and speed in midfield, which, again, glimpses that so far this season. But as a Ryukyu supporter, you want to see more speed and more forward positive passes in the midfield that result in every now and then you want to see your midfielder, your striker, just give it a whack. Put it on frame and see what happens. And we saw some of that confidence out of the Ryukyu midfield because final third, because I think they saw more confidence and solid defending out of the back.
Yeah, I'm pleased to hear that Yong-jik had a good game, because he's someone that over the last couple of years has been picked out quite a lot on this pod for not having this is really good games. So I'm sure that I'm sure he'll be mentioned again in due course. But yeah, it's good to hear that he had a good match and the defense generally. Something that I noticed when I was watching this game was that in sort of with about 20 minutes to go, there was quite a long spell where Ryukyu were able to keep possession down in the left corner.
Mm-hmm.
And so Tochigi would try and get it off him, but they'd concede a throw and Ryukyu would just keep it and just keep cycling it and keep it down there. And it was for several minutes, quite a long time in terms of the game. And I thought that was interesting game management, because from what I've seen of Ryukyu before, like you mentioned the you know, giving up easy chances. There was, I can't remember who it was against, but there was a game a few weeks ago where there was both goals conceded were where Ryukyu lost the ball in their own area or something like that. And then with the Kanazawa game a couple of weeks ago, a few weeks ago, the first 40 minutes, it seemed like Ryukyu were asleep and then suddenly woke up and were fantastic for the second half. And so it's interesting to hear that they're kind of perhaps sort of solidified at the back and working on their game management a bit. But
I think it was in part just seeing what they could do and identifying that. Something that you mentioned, that when you hold possession in a dangerous area against the other team, that's something that gets so overlooked in the post-match report of a clean sheet. When you take the pressure off of your back four for large chunks of the game, that's always important. When you're taking it off, taking that pressure off of them heavily between minute 65 and minute 85, that's when guys get tired. Okazaki came off in, I believe it was the 57th minute. And when you're you know, replacing someone of his importance in the back, you can't just send the sub into chaos. And when you're holding possession at meaningful moments in the game, that's where you really see the difference in at this point last season. Ryukyu had 7 clean sheets. This year we've just had our second, and you know, moments like that, they may not show up in a post-match report, but I think they're extremely critical for a defense that is trying to replace somebody like Tetsuya Chinen, who was bought by Urawa in the offseason, that he was such a just a foundation of our defense last year. And he's somebody that is really tough to replace. And I think we've seen several moments of the team this season where his presence would have done a lot.
Yeah, I remember, Chinen was very impressive last year. And I was not surprised that he got a chance to move up to J1 or to a bigger club. But yeah, it's those sort of players are really hard to replace. It seems like to now, Ryukyu haven't managed to do that. But this now, though, Ryukyu are on a pretty good run. That's 2 draws, a loss, and 2 wins from the last 5. They've just got the 2 clean sheets, first home win of the season. I read on Jeff Osborne's blog, there's their first back-to-back win since match days 20 and 21 of last season. So this, do you think that, has anything particular changed in recent weeks, or is it just sort of coincidence that it's happening now?
Well, I think part of it is starting to solidify in areas that have been really shaky so far this season. I think you start to see some gelling of the back line. I think the midfield is finally starting to build some positive things. I mean, you see we've seen so many occasional glimpses of quality versus quality in Ryukyu season so far, match day one, achieving a 0-0 draw on the road at Zelvia. You know, that is not by any means a guarantee. And week one going out with, again, filling in some of the offseason losses in both midfield and defense and achieving a result. The most recent draw against Niigata, that's a quality side, and taking a point from them, especially given our current standing in the table, I think shows that it can be done and it can be achieved. Against Kumamoto, I think we started to see some of that passing finding where it's supposed to be going. When that service really gets to Kusano, when Kiyotake is at his best, he's driving so much of the attack. Last season, it was Ikeda providing service to Abe in the striker position, and that would be such a threat in the midfielder that Tanaka at right back would be able to find space and just whack into the box one of his 8 assists that he had last season. And being able to, he hasn't quite returned to form, but I think Ryukyu is finally starting to identify that what if we just try and do what we did last season, we don't have the pieces or honestly quality in a lot of ways to play exactly as we did last season. And I think finding ways to reduce some of the pressure or those quality looks for other teams in goal scoring areas of the field, as well as doing something meaningful with possession. We've seen in a few matches this season, Ryukyu had a lot in possession, but didn't do too much with it. And possession is great unless something is being done with it. And I think some of the passing lanes are really starting to find where they need to be. And not just passing out of the back and being slow to build attack, but especially against Kumamoto and Tochigi, finding some of those diagonal passes in the midfield that find the ball in dangerous areas for guys who can put it in the back of the net. In terms of what Ryukyu supporters hope to see, we really hope that that's indicative of, again, what we saw last season, but in different ways this year, of being able to defend and keep teams off the score sheet while potting a couple at the desired end and finding the points that we need to find.
Yeah. It's interesting. You mentioned last year a few times. I should have asked you this before we started talking about the game. But you told me before we started recording that you started following FC Ryukyu last year. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I moved to Okinawa at the beginning of last year. Came from living near Atlanta, Georgia in the U.S. and was a big Atlanta United supporter in the MLS there. Seeing a team that came from nothing to really establishing quality early on, winning a U.S. Open Cup, winning the MLS Championship, but also drawing parallels in what some of any good side has when you have a midfielder who really is the straw that stirs the drink, when you've got your finisher or your closer in a striker like Joseph Martinez. For Atlanta United, Miguel Almiron was the midfielder that was that calming presence, who was then found by Newcastle in the Premier League, being a big supporter of them. And then, for for my future, finding out I was moving to Okinawa, doing some research in 2020, and you know, looking at what I was getting myself into as a supporter. But moving to this wonderful island, and in my first match of 2021, Akamine scoring a goal for Ryukyu within the first minute of the first match that I attend just solidified, yes, this is my team. I am supposed to be here. And you know, from that moment, since getting to know Jeff Osborne, who got the shout out earlier, and his you know, reading his FC Ryukyu blog, and getting to go to matches with him and learn more about the team and more about the J2. It's just been a wonderful experience, despite some of the more recent results. But I could not speak, you know, not the last two matches, obviously, but you know, just getting to go to a few away matches and get to know the Ryukyu supporters. It's been nothing but positive experiences.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, that, yeah, you're a perfect start. You're perfect time to start supporting Ryukyu last year with that amazing start they had, keeping up with Niigata at the top of the standings for almost the first half of the season, and then falling away to finished mid table in the end. I can't remember. They
were top half. Finished ninth last season.
Yeah, ninth, which is still, I think, excuse me, I think that's, I talked about this, or it was talked about at the end of last season, but I think ninth is a pretty good finish for a club of UQ's kind of size and means. And I don't want that to sound disrespectful, but I, you know, they're not one of the bigger clubs. But I think what was interesting was the way that it seemed to me like, because the start was so good, that the fall away seemed even more stark and disappointing, and ended up with the manager, Yasuhiro Higuchi, losing his job. And he was replaced by the current manager, Tetsuhiro Kina. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts on Higuchi and on his dismissal, and also on Kina.
Yeah, it was a just rocket start, and just something that I as was conveyed to me by many Ryukyu supporters. Well, we weren't expecting that, but we're not going to complain. Really, just a sight of a lot of quality and a lot of things going right for FC Ryukyu last year. You know, this point in the season versus this point last year, goal differential of minus 11 currently for Ryukyu, where this point last season plus 10. And part of that is the defending 30 goals allowed for Ryukyu this season versus 16 goals allowed at this point last year. I think Higuchi was very much somebody who said, we're going to play exciting, an exciting brand of football. And he did. His team showed it. And not only were they scoring goals, but they were defending well. 16 matches in last season, they'd had 7 clean sheets, and you know, nothing highlights exciting football quite like also keeping a clean sheet. And as the season progressed, the results started to not be there. And part of it, at least from my perspective and some of the perspectives of FC Ryukyu supporters, was an inability to adjust. That it would be it's one thing when the fans have an idea of the brand of football, but when predictability becomes so obvious and how the team is going to be broken down, and they're broken down by opposing teams in the same way, and goals are coming from the same place, and lineups are remaining the same, and opposing goals are happening in the same way, that that lack of adjustment and that lack of inspiration that the team started with and then just fell away, I think, did in Higuchi. A few people said that he was a victim of his own success, which I think to some degree is true. Ryukyu hadn't seen results like that, but that element of just not making adjustments and not providing something different when people, especially opposing teams, found what wasn't working for FC Ryukyu, I think kind of highlighted that something needed to be different. And as Kina came in, the team did have a little bit of a bounce, and started really playing similar to the way that they started the season. And then the off season, hopes were high based on, Ryukyu's highest ever finish. And again, we're buoyed by that 0-0 win against Zelvia to some extent. That was a litmus test of where is this team going to be, and on the road at Zelvia was a good measurement of you had all off season to plan against it. What did you do? And followed by a couple losses. A 3-2 win against Yamaguchi on the road, which again showed some of that fight, some of that passion that was really present last year, followed by just four rough matches in a row, including that 4-1 loss to Oita and 5-2 loss against Tokyo Verde, where that same issue of based on the play of the other team, they're seeing something and they're able to exploit it, whether it's at the back line, whether it's lack of gap discipline in the midfield, or just giving too much space in certain areas of the attack. That lack of adjustment by the manager started to creep into I think the team, I know the supporters, and seeing real minor adjustments in really bad runs of form has taken some of the wind out of the sails of, I think, the team and the supporters. But recently, again, I think it's starting to come back. But it's a long season, and the road doesn't get easier. Still trying to find ways to replace Sheenan at center back, Koya Kazama in the midfield, and some of the forward support that he provided, let alone what he was able to put on the score sheet. I think those are still challenges, along with players like Tanaka, Abe, Ikeda, losing some of their quality from the previous season, largely due to injury. I think there's a lot of areas where Ryukyu's still trying to recapture that magic that they had last season.
Okay, yeah, that's really interesting to hear. It's good because we I think we've talked a lot about people on the pod previously have talked a lot about Higuchi and Kina and the way things are going with the two managers, and it's interesting to get an actual Ryukyu supporters' view of it. But it still definitely seems like there is a lot of work to be done. He's gonna have to roll his sleeves up, and
none of it is improved by Kina missing the previous match due to COVID, and first team coach Kazuki Kuranuki getting the first home win in 11 matches for FC Ryukyu. As caretaker, and just those little things like that, that it's it adds another question to the pile. But also at some point, FC Ryukyu supporters are just happy to celebrate the first home win in far too long.
Yeah, and it's definitely something to celebrate, especially as it was against another team that's kind of getting dragged. Well, kind of getting. They are definitely in the mix at the bottom. Tochigi, they're 19th. They're now only 2 points ahead of Ryukyu. They haven't won for 9 games. What did you make of them? What was your impression of Tochigi from this match?
I think it is another side that it has a lot of work ahead of them, because just where the ball finds its way, or where the ball ends up, not only in offense but in defense, it is concerning. When two passes from the center of the field find their way, it takes two passes to get into the offensive box. I think that becomes a real issue of is it personnel, is it formation, or is it player discipline? I thought Tochigi had some real moments that had us nervous, had the supporters nervous in terms of their ability to pinpoint crosses. In terms of their ability to connect a lot of passes, or just go route one and threaten through the middle of the field, I didn't see a lot of it. And just one thing that I had mentioned to Jeff after the game was, as highlighted by that long period of offensive possession held down in the corner, it was a nervous match because we led for the majority of it, but I've been much more nervous leading 1-0 at home than I was this weekend.
I think that says quite a lot about Tochigi, really. I mean, look, they've only scored 9 goals this year, and their defense is still pretty good. They've only conceded 17, but if your attack's not giving the support to the defense, then I mean, yeah, there's not much hope. I mean, they from what I've seen of them this year, they seem fairly toothless, and the numbers they bear that out, really. And previously, because under the last manager, they were really solid defensively, and they were also really good from set pieces. And their top scorer was the centre-back, Yanagi. He went to Okayama, and their defence doesn't seem to have suffered too much, but they didn't seem dangerous from set pieces. They didn't look dangerous at all from this match. And when they played Kanazawa, our defence was barely troubled by them, really, and I think they should be quite worried.
Yeah, I think that as evidenced by their performance this weekend, being at the match as well as watching the match a second time, that if it wasn't coming out of a cross from one of the outside backs, I didn't know where a goal was going to come from them. And it did appear as though it was a lack of adjustment, but it was just again something happy to see for Ryukyu supporters of a strong midfield and not giving space in the dangerous areas. I don't think Ryukyu supporters are going to be too upset giving that outside space when a healthy Okazaki and a first in the year Lee Yong-jik are playing at their best. But I think, yeah, I think in terms of their strike force, not only is it, it just didn't have the teeth that I think I would imagine their supporters, which fair play to the Tochigi supporters this week. There were a lot of them that made the trip, and they were great support for their team in Okinawa. But apart from just struggling to get the ball into the dangerous areas, I think their strike force left a little bit to be desired.
Well, I think it's a great result for Ryukyu, and I think it might be something that you, when it comes to the end of the season, you look back and think that this was absolutely crucial. It could be one that you're going to be maybe not reminiscing about, because it wasn't a classic, but it was a great result. That'll do for part one. All right, thanks for your analysis on that, James. Don't go anywhere. I'm going to round up the rest of the Match Day 16 action in just a moment. Welcome back, everyone. You've heard me and James discuss probably the weekend's biggest game, but let's take a quick look at the rest of the Match Day 16 action. There was one postponed game, Iwate against Yamagata, which has been rescheduled for Wednesday the 15th of June. Match Day 16 began with Reno for Yamaguchi travelling to Vanfore Kofu in search of their first away win, but they got off to the worst possible start when Motoki Hasegawa centred for William Lira to score an easy tap-in after just 75 seconds. Both keepers were busy, and Kofu almost got a second 10 minutes into the second half. Kentaro Seki saved well from Toshiki Ishikawa, and Masahiro Sekiguchi's follow-up hit the post. Daisuke Takagi had a good chance to level things up in the 66th minute, but he put his free header wide. He made up for it 10 minutes later, though, heading in from close range after good work down the left from Ryoto Kodama and Georgi Ikegami. 2 minutes after that, a golden opportunity for Kofu to score actually led to them going down to 10 men. Junma Miyazaki miscontrolled when through on goal, and in his attempts to win it back, got a straight red card for kicking Seki in the head. So it finished 1-1. That first away win continues to elude mid-table Yamaguchi, while Kofu are seventh. Omiya Ardija made it 4 games unbeaten as they drew 0-0 away to frustratingly inconsistent Vivarin Nagasaki. Omiya hit the post twice in quick succession just after the half-hour mark. A ball over the top found Masato Kojima. He hit the post, but the ball came out to Omiya on the right and was worked to Shinya Yajima on the edge of the area, whose shot hit the post in almost exactly the same place. Aside from one powerful Cristiano shot, Nagasaki failed to trouble Yuta Minami in the Omiya goal, and they're currently down in 15th. Oita Trinita welcomed Ruasso Kumamoto to the Showa Denki Dome for a Kyushu derby on Saturday afternoon. A little too much of a welcome, really, as Keisuke Tanabe volleyed in Toshiki Takahashi's cross after just 16 seconds. It was 2-0 to Kumamoto inside half an hour when Oita failed to clear, and Naohiro Sugiyama swept in Koki Sakamoto's cross. Oita almost made the perfect start to the second half when Ruasso Kumamoto's goalkeeper Yuya Sato gave the ball away, but Osamu Henry Ioha headed off the line to preserve the 2-goal lead, which lasted until the 80th minute. Kazuki Fujimoto bundled the ball in after a free kick. That was it, though. Kumamoto 2-1 winners and in 8th place, part of a group of 5 teams on 23 points. 1 point behind that group is Tokyo Verdy, whose poor run of results continued on Saturday at the hands of Mito Hollyhock. Verdy came close to opening the scoring in the 12th minute, really close. A high ball from the left found Corky Molitor at the back post, but his side-footed shot rolled along the goal line and bounced off the far post to safety. Mito defender Takaya Kuroishi also hit the post just before half-time, but from much further out. Mito were gifted an opportunity in the 54th minute when Verdy gave the ball away in their own half, and Yutaka Soneda made them pay with a curled shot into the bottom corner.
11 minutes later, a long ball from Mito goalkeeper Lui Yamaguchi evaded everyone and turned into a perfect through ball for Kosuke Kinoshita to calmly slot past Toru Takagiwa and make it 2-0, which is how it finished. A much-needed win for Mito. If Saturday's biggest winners were found at the bottom of the table in the form of FC Ryukyu, Sunday's biggest winners were at the top, as Vegalta Sendai beat Zegen Kanazawa 4-1 to move into first place. The deadlock in a fairly even first half was broken by Motohiko Nakajima in the 38th minute, with a free kick hit perfectly past the wall, just out of Kanazawa goalie Yuto Shirai's reach and into the far top corner. Things got away from Kanazawa in the second half. In the 50th minute, a blocked ball fell to Foginho, who evaded tackles and shot across Shirai and into the bottom corner. Reward for a fine performance by the bearded Brazilian, who got another 12 minutes later when he started a quick counter-attack by dispossessing Keita Fujimura deep in the Sendai half and arrived at the back post all alone to tap in Yasushi Endo's low cross. Kanazawa pulled one back in the 75th minute when a loose ball from a corner fell nicely for Daisuke Matsumoto, but Sendai had the last word when Felipe Cardozo's pass across the area found Yusuke Minagawa in acres of space to tap in. Sendai moved ahead of Albirex Niigata, who lost 2-1 away to Machida Zelvia. William Pope in the Machida goal made a terrific save from Niigata's Yuji Hoshi in the 18th minute. Hoshi was alone at the back post, and Pope had to stretch a hand up as he was diving to stop the ball from looping over him. Then, in the 29th minute, a candidate for goal of the season, Kazuma Yamaguchi, hitting a free kick into the top right corner from very, very long range. The replay with the camera angle from directly behind is great, and it also captures his teammates' disbelief well too. It was 2-0 early in the second half when Shusuke Ota cut in from the left and fired a low shot that Ryosuke Kojima parried onto Chong Tese and into the net. Niigata pulled one back in stoppage time. Shunya Suganuma pulled Koji Suzuki's shirt and the Niigata number 9 scored the resulting penalty. That was Machida's first win since the end of March and they moved up to 6th. Niigata actually moved down to 3rd as they were also overtaken by Yokohama FC, back to winning ways with a 2-1 victory over Tokushima Vortis. They took the lead just before half-time when Zane Isaka's cross was flicked on by Koki Ogawa and knocked in by Sho Ito. The lead was doubled on 64 minutes when Gabriel emerged from the crowd to score from Kohei Tezuka's corner. Yokohama goalie Sven Brodersen's clean sheet was ruined in stoppage time, Kazunari Ichimi shooting through a crowd to beat him at the near post. That was Yokohama FC's first win in a month. Tokushima, meanwhile, have lost only 3 times, but are currently 12th. Zespa Kusatsu Gunma also won for the first time in a month, 1-0 away to Fajiano Okayama. Yuzo Iwakami got the game's only goal midway through the second half, and it was an unusual one. He took a corner that somehow got tangled in Okayama keeper Junki Kanayama's feet as he turned and bounced into the goal. That's consecutive losses for Okayama for the first time this season, but they're still 4th, and Gunma move up to 11th. There was also a 1-0 win for the away team at the Fukuda Denshi Arena, as Blaublitz Akita made it 3 wins in a row by beating Jeff United. From the DAZN highlights, it looked like Jeff had the better of the first half, but wasteful finishing meant it stayed goalless at the break. Akita came into the game more in the second half, and when Jeff failed to clear in the aftermath of a free kick, Ibuki Yoshida was waiting in front of goal to convert Jurato Ikeda's cross in the 73rd minute. There were a couple of incidents not in the DAZN highlights that warranted inclusion. In the 30th minute, diminutive Akita midfielder Ryota Nakamura mistimed a jump and bumped into Andrew Kumagai, who then fell backwards into a teammate. Both Nakamura and Kumagai had to be substituted injured. Then, in the 88th minute, a moment that featured on the Judge replay programme, Issei Takahashi, who replaced Kumagai, took a studs-up foot-to-the-head from Hayate Take. Take received a yellow card, which the Judge replay panel agreed could easily have been a red, as it was high and dangerous. Takahashi was stretchered off, and after the game there were apparently boos from the Jeff supporters, and later abusive messages sent on social media. Nevertheless, Akita are up in 9th now,
while Jeff are down in 18th.
That's all the Matchday 16 games taken care of. I'll be back in a moment to look at the coming fixtures with James.
Welcome back, everyone. James has come back and he's going to help me preview the upcoming fixtures. There's actually one rescheduled Matchday 15 match that took place on Wednesday, the 18th of May. It was Omiya against Iwate. Listeners will know the result of that by the time this podcast is up. And we're not going to talk about it now. John's going to talk about it. I'll let John talk about it next week. He can do that. We're going to talk about Matchday 17. And most of the games take place on Saturday, the 21st of May. Starting at 1 o'clock, Ruwaso Kumamoto take on a bruised and battered Jeff United. Then there are five games at 2 o'clock. Akita play Tokyo Verdy. That game's going to be on the J-League's international YouTube channel. And then Omiya play Sendai. Niigata take on Yokohama FC. Kanazawa play Yamagata. And Tokushima take on Tochigi. Then at 4 o'clock, Mito play Iwate. At 6 o'clock, Okayama play Oita. And at 7 o'clock, Ryukyu welcome Kofu. Then on Sunday the 22nd, there are two games at 2 o'clock. Machida against Gunma. And Yamaguchi against Nagasaki. James, any games there that look interesting to you?
Yeah, as a Ryukyu supporter, the Ryukyu Kofu match, I definitely want to see if we can maintain our recent form, and especially against a top 10 side currently in Kofu. Can we continue to defend? Can Ryukyu find some goals against a good side in Kofu? I also am excited for the Niigata Yokohama match. Two top three sides, a lot of quality in those sides, and you know with the way that these teams have played. I think it's got every opportunity to be a tight match, but there is so much quality in those sides that that quality could shine in a fun way. And then the Sendai Omiya match, obviously Omiya's proximity to Ryukyu in the table, I think, is something that could be it's something that I'm keeping my eye on, but in terms of how that match could turn into something of a goal fest, Sendai has three players on their roster with five goals already this season, and goals in the Sendai side could come from anywhere, and Omiya could just say, you want to score goals, I'll score goals too, and that match could turn into something fun.
Yeah, that's one thing I saw that and thought, oh yeah, goals there. Omiya and Sendai both had quite a few high scoring games, although having said that, that'll be 0-0.
100%. That will be a 0-0 final in that match. Yeah.
The other ones that stood out for me, your choices were good ones as well. Of course, I'm interested in Kanazawa against Yamagata. Kanazawa need to bounce back from it was a bad result, but not a bad performance away to Sendai. Whereas Yamagata are in form and they've had a week off. So it'll be interesting to see if that affects them at all. And also, of course, last time Yamagata came to Kanazawa, we had that magical late goal from Yuji Senema that essentially secured or gave us a lifeline going into the final day, the magic moment. I'm also interested in Mito against Iwate, because I think Mito, well, they really need to move away from trouble, whereas Iwate, of course, will want to be dragging as many other teams into trouble as they can. And then the last one, I thought, on Sunday, Yamaguchi against Nagasaki would be good, because Yamaguchi are pretty good at home, but Nagasaki are just all over the place at the moment, and if they've got so much attacking talent in particular, and if that clicks, then they're almost unplayable, really. But they something strange is going on there. They're not clicking, or things aren't working properly at the moment. It'd be interesting to see if they can do that.
But, Nagasaki going from no goals against Omiya to four goals against Iwate. That side has when their quality awakens, it's something that other teams have to take note of.
Yeah. All right. So interesting stuff happening all over the country at the weekend. That's it from us. James, thanks very much for coming on the pod. It's been really, really interesting to get your analysis and your Ryukyu thoughts. And I hope that this is the start of an upturn in form for your boys. And maybe later in the season, we can have you on to tell us about all the good things that have been happening down in Okinawa.
Sounds great. Thank you very much for having me, James. I hope the listeners enjoyed a James heavy episode, and any time you need to hear from me, I'm happy to join.
Great. Yeah. Thanks. We could rename it James Talk Extra Time. So thanks, James. Thanks to everyone for listening and downloading and liking and retweeting and all that stuff. And thanks to everyone who supports us on Patreon. If you want to know more, go to patreon.com/jtalkpod. And stay tuned, because here comes Magic Mike Innes with all the latest from J3 in J-Talk Short Corner.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on fixtures in Round 9 of the J3 season and previewing all the J3-related games coming up in the next few days. First, some items of J3 news since the last pod. Three games postponed earlier in the season due to COVID outbreaks have been rescheduled. The Round 7 Kanagawa Derby between SC Sagamihara and YSCC Yokohama will take place this coming Thursday, the 19th of May. A Round 8 match, Gainare Tottori against Ehime FC, will be played on Wednesday, the 25th of May, and Sagamihara's Round 8 game at Vanrare Hachinohe will be on Wednesday, the 15th of June. The J-League have announced the winners of the Player, Coach and Goal of the Month awards for April. The first two reflect Matsumoto Yamaga's impressive results over the course of the month, as Ayumu Yokoyama takes the Player Prize and Hiroshi Nanami is named Coach of the Month, reward for his team picking up 10 points from 4 games. The goal choice is Yuya Takazawa's run and curling shot for Giramans Kitakyushu against FC Imabari in Round 4. Congratulations to all concerned. Meanwhile, Imabari's Dutch striker Ralf Soyntjens has returned to the Netherlands for medical treatment after the 33-year-old reported on his Instagram account that a hospital scan to investigate a shoulder injury had indicated the presence of a tumour. Soyntjens has taken part in 3 games for Imabari after signing from NAC Breda less than 2 months ago. All best wishes to him for a full and speedy recovery. And an unusual story to emerge from Kagoshima United, who report that midfielder Junki Goryo has had his Twitter account hacked. The club say Goryo can't currently access the account and that none of the tweets posted since the 28th of January are by the player. Now onto the action and J3 Round 9, with all 9 fixtures scheduled for Sunday the 15th of May. 3 teams came into the round in joint first place, but only one managed the victory. That was Kagoshima United, who took their potent attack to one of the division's best defences at FC Imabari. It was Kagoshima, though, who had a lucky escape in only the 4th minute, left back Atsuki Satsukawa out of position and struggling to deal with Takuya Shimamura's through pass, which Kazaki Nakagawa converted only to be ruled offside. At the other end, the visitors should have gone in front just before half-time. Corky Adidas' superb cushioned header setting up a great chance for Frank Romero, which he somehow pulled wide from 6 yards. The game's crucial moment came on the hour when, in front of the travelling fans, Yuji Kimura slung in a corner, Anita flicked it on at the near post, and captain Kenta Hirose poked it over the line. Defending their lead, Kagoshima just survived on 67 minutes when Shimamura hit the post, Satsukawa's positioning again leaving something to be desired, but they held on for a final score of Imabari 0, Kagoshima 1. The home side's defence breached for the first time in 5 games due to a momentary lack of concentration. Kagoshima ride their luck but continue the excellent start made under coach Naoto Otake. Perhaps the most eagerly awaited game of the whole J3 season was the first ever J-League Shinshu Derby between High Flyers Matsumoto Yamaga and AC Nagano Parseiro, staged at Parseiro's Nagano U Stadium in front of a sellout 13,244 crowd. A great atmosphere there may have been, but both sides' recent inability to find the net continued into this game. Yamaga's top scorer Ayumu Yokoyama had a half chance in the 31st minute, advancing into the area and sending in a powerful angled shot which Issei Oichi tipped over the bar. And just before half time, the teenager should have scored, unmarked and on the end of Shaw Sumida's long cross, but he skied the chance from just under the bar. The better chances for Parseiro came in the late stages of the game, as first ex-Matsumoto midfielder Masaki Miyasaka hammered in a 40-yard free kick that had Victor scrambling to make the save, and then in the last minute of the 90, another Miyasaka set piece was headed just off target by Hiroki Yamamoto, to the frustration of coach Yuki Stealth. Final score, Nagano 0, Matsumoto 0. Parseiro successfully staging a great occasion, but neither side having the quality or composure to break the deadlock and take the points. Iwaki FC also dropped points to slip behind Kagoshima, although their match at home to Fujieda My FC was very much within the grasp of the J-League new boys. They were 2-0 up and cruising, a gift from Shohei Kawakami having enabled Iwaki to take a 20th minute lead. The My FC midfielder played a loose pass across his own penalty area that fell kindly for Daigo Furukawa, who curled a confident finish past Kei Uchiyama from 20 yards. The second goal followed early in the second half, Kotaro Anima converting a penalty awarded for a foul on Hiroto Iwabuchi by Nobuyuki Kawashima. But My FC have found some form lately and in the 66th minute gave themselves a lifeline, or had themselves a lifeline handed to them when Taisuke Mizuno floated in a free kick and Iwabuchi could only glance a header past his own keeper Shuhei Shikano and into the net. And in the 72nd minute, Fujieda drew level, a counter-attack leading to Masahiko Sugita centering for Yuki Oshitani, who beat Kyoan Hoshi and Rei Ieizumi to the ball and volleyed in. Final score, Iwaki 2, Fujieda 2, and the third home game of the season when Iwaki haven't quite been on it. My FC starting to put together a little run of form and now up to 7th. Iwaki and Matsumoto both dropping points offered the opportunity for Toshihiro Hattori's Fukushima United to move back into the promotion places if they could win at struggling Gainare Tottori. It turned out to be a comfortable afternoon for Fukushima, who went ahead in the 13th minute, Ryota Kitamura sending over a corner, Kazuki Dohana knocking it on, and Junya Takahashi racing in to finish at the far post. For Gainare, this was a familiar story of failing to defend set pieces. Taiki Arai and Yusuke Ishida both being outfought in key battles for the ball. And 5 minutes later, the same weakness was exposed again. No one picking up Shun Obu as he headed home a Kitamura free kick for 2-0. 11 minutes before the break, the game was effectively concluded as a contest. Shoki Nagano latching on to a through pass and tangling with Tottori defender Naoya Uozato for a penalty kick, coolly dispatched by the teenager for his first league goal of the season. Hattori's team made absolutely certain midway through the second half, a comedy of Gainare errors involving Ishida and rookie Hibiki Nagai, first enabling Kosuke Tanaka to set up Nagano for a cross, and then cueing Takahashi to tap gleefully in as the ball rolled along the goal line. A sixth of the season for Takahashi, and he won't score an easier one. Final score, Tottori 0, Fukushima 4. Gainare's problems plain for all to see. Fukushima could have been caught out by a better opponent, but Hattori has his men set up to beat what's in front of them, and they duly picked up a first win in 3. Elsewhere, the key focus of attention was the first J3 fixture for Yuji Yokoyama as coach of FC Gifu, at home to another underperforming side in SC Sagamihara. Yokoyama made 5 changes compared to the last match in charge of his predecessor, Toshiya Mura, including first league starts this season for Wataru Hashimoto and Takuya Honda, while Yoshihiro Shoji and Tomoya Ugajin both dropped to the bench. For their part, Sagamihara were coming into the game having not played a league fixture for 4 weeks following Emperor's Cup qualifiers and COVID-related postponements. Jiro Kamata came into their team at centre-back after an injury to captain Hiroki Mizumoto. Gifu started well, taking the lead in only the 8th minute when Honda's long ball into the area was touched back by Hirofumi Yamauchi for Daisuke Ishizu, given space to set up a shot that was deflected past Kentaro Kakkoi and in. Sagamihana had 2 good chances to draw level in the minutes that followed, as first, Daisuke Watabe's chip into the goal mouth caused panic in the home defence, but Riku Tanaka's scrappy shot was shepherded round the posts by keeper Takuya Matsumoto, and then Tsubasa Ando hit a first-time half-volley just wide. With 20 minutes left, Sagamihara's experienced forward Takayuki Funayama put a great chance embarrassingly off target. Still no J3 goals for the ex-Chiba striker. And Gifu confirmed the win in the 83rd minute. Shoji playing it into the area, Kosuke Fujioka getting the better of Yudai Fujiwara and beating Kakkoi with a low shot from 10 yards. Final score, Gifu 2, Sagamihara 0. Yokoyama couldn't have asked for a better start as Gifu climbed the table to 12th. Takuya Takagi's Sagamihara look low on confidence after 4 straight losses. Deeper in the doldrums than Sagamihara are YSCC Yokohama, beaten for the 7th consecutive match at Katare Toyama. It was pretty much game over as early as the 10th minute, by which time YSCC were already 2 down. The first came from a Yuya Himeno corner, flicked on by rookie Katare defender Kyosuke Kamiyama and finished by Takuma Shikayama. The second, a Makoto Rindo free kick that eluded the defensive wall and found its way inside the post. 5 minutes into the second half came the third, another Himeno corner, a free header for Rindo to set up Shota Kawanishi to bundle it in at the far post. Shortly afterwards, YSCC did get on the score sheet with perhaps the goal of the game, their first league goal since March. A Riku Furuyado dummy allowing him to beat Shikayama and cross for Tomoya Hayashi to finish well from 12 yards. But Toyama restored their three-goal lead almost immediately, Furuyado misplacing a pass to allow Tsubasa Yoshihira to slide the ball through for Kawanishi to score his second of the game. Last year's J3 top scorer starting to find the net regularly with his new club, although he went on to miss three good chances for a hat-trick. Arthur Silva, coming on as a substitute, managed to score his first goal in a Katane shirt, getting on the end of Naoto Ando's cross, easily beating Kento Dodate in the air to put an unstoppable header past Ryo Ishii. In injury time, YSCC captain Dodate concluded an unhappy afternoon by bringing down Shunta Takahashi and so earning a second yellow card. He'll miss the rearranged derby against Sagamihara. Final score, Toyama 5, YSCC 1. Barely a challenge for Katare, although after their shaky start to the season, how good is it to see Kawanishi and Arthur Silva starting to have an impact? Another poor performance from YSCC, looking ill-equipped to cope with the challenges of J3 football. There's better news, however, for Vanrare Hachinohe, who stole a late win in their home game with Giramance Kitakyushu. Vanrare should have been out of sight by half-time against a lacklustre Giramance. Set plays and crosses by Jun Anima repeatedly causing chaos in the visiting defence, but the Hachinohe front line couldn't find a way to turn chances into goals. The best Kitakyushu had to show came in the 63rd minute, a long-range effort from Yuki Nakayama, bringing a diving save out of Hayate Tsuta. Did Tsuta then bring down Takeaki Harigaya as he went in for the follow-up? No foul, no penalty, said referee Toshihiro Nakai. The match's decisive moment came in the 91st minute, by which time the whole Kitakyushu defence seemed to have switched off as overlapping Takeru Itakura crossed from the Hachinohe right. Kazuki Sato had plenty of time to steady himself and fire a shot off the underside of the bar, which bounced down for Aoi Sato to nod over the line. Final score, Hachinohe 1, Kitakyushu 0. A priceless win for Vanrare and some small signs of improvement. 2 points and no goals in the last five games for Giramance, slipping to 14th as their downward spiral sees no sign of ending under Kenichi Amano. Extra time. A draw between Azul Claro Numazu and Ehime FC may not sound like the stuff of dreams, but it was a lively, up-tempo encounter between two teams who worked hard to win the game. In the first half, Ehime went close through a Riki Matsuda header and a 25-yard shot from Kohei Shin that hit the top of the crossbar, and Numazu's Takumi Hama headed straight at the keeper when left unmarked at a Ryoma Kita corner kick. And Azul Claro went in front 7 minutes after the restart, some clever play from Tatsuya Anzai setting up Kotaro Tokunaga to shoot in off the post from 15 yards. As Ehime hunted for an equaliser, Ryo Sato had a shot blocked on the line by the determined Anzai, but with 4 minutes remaining, the mighty Mikans found a way through. Sato laying the ball off for Motoki Ohara to send a 20-yard screamer inside the far post. Not that that was the end of the action, as in stoppage time, first some quick thinking by Ehime veteran Shigeru Yokotani set up a great chance for Shin, who blasted unaccountably off target with the goal at his mercy, and then Azul Claro forward Kenshiro Suzuki was given a second yellow card for a challenge on away keeper Kenta Tokushige. Final score, Numazu 1, Ehime 1. Azul Claro under Masataka Imai far more competitive than anticipated in pre-season. Ehime need a goal scorer, but now are unbeaten in five. Finally, low-key would be the politest word to describe Tegevajaro Miyazaki against Kamatamare Sanuki, seemingly the first match ever to be played in Miyazaki in anything other than bright sunshine. A speculative 25-yard shot from Sanuki rookie Taiyo Namazuta, which bounced off the top of the bar, was the closest the match came to a goal. So let's conclude matters by saying the final score was indeed Miyazaki 0, Sanuki 0. Hard to remember a less impressive J3 performance by Tegevajaro. An away point for COVID-affected Kamatamare constitutes a good point. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 9, noting that the games in hand situation remains complicated. Ehime, Gifu, Hachinohe and YSCC have one game in hand. Sagamihara and Tottori have two. The top four teams are Kagoshima with 20 points, then it's Fukushima, Iwaki and Matsumoto, all with 18. At the other end of the table, the bottom four are Sagamihara in 15th with 6 points, then it's Hachinohe also with 6, Tottori with 4, and bottom with 1, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to J3 related games over the next few days. They may well both have been played by the time you get to listen to this episode, but there are two rearranged league games this week. Gifu against Tottori is on Wednesday the 28th, an opportunity for Yuji Yokoyama to pick up his second win for Gifu, and Sagamihara against YSCC is on Thursday the 19th. Both sides, it's fair to say, need the points. Over the weekend of the 21st and 22nd, though, no league games. It's the Emperor's Cup first round, which for J3 fans on Saturday the 21st means Matsumoto Yamaga against Hokuriku University, Fukushima United against North Asia University, FC Gifu against Chukyo University, and FC Imabari against ambitious Kyushu leaguers Okinawa SV. Then on Sunday the 22nd, there's a pair of all J3 ties. Leaders Kagoshima United against off-form Giramantz Kitakyushu and Katare Toyama against Fujieda MyFC. And there's also Gainare Tottori looking at a difficult tie against JFL side Verspa Oita. And finally, Vanrane Hachinohe against Niigata University of Health and Welfare SC. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.